Imagine you are building a multi-million dollar health app. You've stress tested all the code, you've deployed it perfectly, and your user base is just exploding.
Right, living the absolute dream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then you wake up one morning and find out that a single microphone just sitting on a doctor's desk in Louisiana has basically made your entire product illegal.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't get hacked. You didn't leak any data. You literally just missed a tiny state-level rule change about how that specific microphone gets turned on.
And the crazy thing is, that scenario is playing out every single day right now.
It really is.
I mean, while everyone is just staring at Washington, waiting for some grand sweeping federal AI legislation, the states are absolutely not waiting around. They are actively rewriting the code as we speak.
And that is exactly what we are exploring today. So, welcome to the deep dive. We have a seriously fascinating stack of sources for you today, tracking this massive wave of state legislative updates.
Yeah, it's a lot of ground to cover.
It is. We are pulling insights from new privacy frameworks in Louisiana, Delaware, New York, and California, alongside this really incredible clinical AI case study from Seattle Children's Hospital.
Which is such a good case study, by the way. But yeah, it's a massive amount of information. Though, if you look closely, there is this very distinct, very strict architecture that's starting to emerge across the whole country.
For sure. And our mission for this deep dive is to, look past those high altitude mainstream headlines. We want to extract a highly practical playbook specifically for you.
Right, getting into the weeds.
Exactly. So whether you are corporate counsel trying to just keep your company out of court, or you're a tech builder designing the next generation of AI products, we're going to map out the exact compliance thresholds, the design requirements, and these regional patterns you really need to know about right now.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's unpack this. I think we need to start with the foundation, like who actually has to follow these rules. Because my understanding is that the definition of who is actually in scope is just shifting dramatically beneath our feet.
Oh, totally. The net is getting significantly wider and it's happening incredibly fast. I mean, let's just look at Delaware for a second.
Okay.
Their Baseline Privacy Act only took effect in January of 2025, so it's barely a year and a half old. But Delaware just passed an update that cuts the applicability threshold of that law from 35,000 consumers all the way down to 15,000.
Wait, hold on. 15,000 consumers. That is, I mean, that's not a massive tech conglomerate.
Not at all.
If I run like a local e-commerce store or even just a regional bakery with a really good loyalty program and an email list, I could easily hit 15,000 profiles.
Easily.
Yeah.
Are small businesses suddenly expected to afford, enterprise-level compliance?
That is exactly the harsh reality of this update. And the thing is, that number isn't arbitrary.
What do you mean?
Well, if you look at the population percentages, Delaware is deliberately aligning itself with the tighter end of the New England and Mid-Atlantic privacy cohort.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are matching the benchmarks that are already set by states like Connecticut and New Jersey.
So this is not just one state going rogue. They're actually forming this cohesive regional block.
Precisely.
It kind of reminds me of a theme park, suddenly lowering the height requirement on a roller coaster.
That's a great way to put it.
Like you have this whole new tier of mid-sized businesses who thought they were way too small to ride, and suddenly, boom, they are strapped in and subjected to the full G-force of a comprehensive privacy law.
Yeah, they're on the ride whether they want to be or not. And the pattern is incredibly predictable now. A state passes a baseline law, they wait a year,
Yeah.
and then they slash the threshold to catch way more companies.
Right.
But what's equally important is what is happening in states that didn't previously have any comprehensive privacy laws at all. They are entering the chat now, and they are bringing some very heavy enforcement mechanisms with them.
Let's talk about that, because if I'm looking at the coasts forming these tight regulatory blocks, I have to wonder what the rest of the country is doing. Like, what are we seeing outside of the typical tech hubs?
Well, look at Louisiana. They just passed a comprehensive consumer privacy law and it takes effect in January 2027,
Okay.
which makes them the 22nd state to do so. And it just completely shatters that old narrative that comprehensive privacy is strictly a blue state priority.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, this bill passed the state Senate 34 to 0. It passed the House unanimously, and it went straight to a Republican governor.
So privacy is just a universally bipartisan issue now. It really doesn't matter where you are.
Exactly.
And if you hit their thresholds, which for Louisiana are $25 million in revenue or 75,000 consumers, or generating 50% of your revenue from selling personal data, you are regulated.
You're at scope, yeah.
But how are they actually enforcing this? Because, you know, an unfunded mandate doesn't really scare a massive tech giant.
Right. And what's fascinating here is how they structured that enforcement. This is where corporate counsel really needs to pay close attention.
Okay, lay it on us.
Louisiana took a very fascinating path. They did not stand up a brand new standalone privacy agency like some other states do.
Right. Like California did.
Exactly. Instead, they are empowering the Attorney General to enforce these privacy violations under the state's unfair trade practices law.
Wait, why does that matter? Like, what is the practical difference between a privacy agency and an unfair trade practices claim?
It completely changes the financial stakes. Coupling privacy to unfair trade practices opens the door to steep civil penalties and attorney fees.
Yikes.
But the absolute kicker is that if the state can prove your violation was willful, you are exposed to treble damages.
Okay, for those of us who aren't practicing attorneys, define treble damages in this specific context.
It basically means whatever the financial penalty is assessed at, the court multiplies it by three.
Wow. Literally times three.
Yeah.
So if you're corporate counsel and you get an enforcement letter from the Louisiana Attorney General, that threat of triple the financial penalty completely ruins your math for, you know, just settling out of court.
Precisely. You absolutely cannot afford to drag your feet or test the waters in litigation when the damages can be tripled. You have to run your threshold math today, figure out if you're in scope, and get compliant way before 2027.
Okay, so the net is definitely wider. We know who is getting caught.
Yeah.
But I want to shift to the mechanics a bit.
Sure.
What are these states actually forcing companies to change in their actual software? Because just reading through these updates, it feels like the operational windows are shrinking while the hurdles to get user consent are getting much, much taller.
That is the perfect transition, honestly, because now we are moving from the legal department straight to the engineering department. Let's go back to Delaware for a second. Alongside dropping their threshold, they passed another update specifically targeting sensitive personal data.
Okay, so like what?
We're talking about mental health information, biometric data, and precise geolocation.
Basically the most valuable data points for any targeted advertising.
Exactly. And Delaware is pulling all of that sensitive data behind a very strict opt-in gate, meaning before any sale or processing of that data can happen, the user has to affirmatively say yes.
Okay, let me stop you there because I really want to put the listener in the hot seat for a minute.
Go for it.
If you are a developer right now listening to this, and your UX team just handed you a slick design for a new mobile app, how does this change the actual buttons on the screen? Like, can I still use a pre-checked box? Can I use one of those banners that says, you know, by continuing to use this site, you agree?
No, absolutely yeah. Not. You have to push back on that design immediately.
Really?
Yeah. Under this new framework, silence is never permission anymore. An ignored pop-up is not permission. The state requires an affirmative logged consent record that is integrated directly into the user experience. You as the builder have to create a mechanism that actively forces the user to click, yes, I consent.
And I'm guessing you have to prove they clicked it.
Exactly. You have to store the timestamp of that click before you ever allow that data to enter your sales pipeline.
So if I rely on like passive data collection to monetize my free app, I have to fundamentally redesign my entire onboarding flow.
Yes, you do. And if we look at California, we see yet another way states are forcing these fundamental redesigns.
Okay.
But this time it's regarding how fast your software actually has to operate.
Oh, that's interesting. I imagine a lot of companies think they have their data request pipelines figured out by now. Are the states really messing with those timelines too?
Oh, they definitely are. There's a recent California bill, SB 1106, amending their data broker law, and it quietly dropped the required response time frame for consumer data requests from 45 days down to 30 days.
Wait, 30 days instead of 45? I mean, on paper, losing 15 days doesn't sound like a massive shift to the average person.
Right, it sounds minor.
But I have to imagine, from a back-end database perspective, that is a total nightmare. It's like taking a massive slow-moving freight train and suddenly telling the conductor, hey, you have to make the exact same trip in 2/3 of the time.
That is exactly what it's like.
You can't just tell the train to drive faster. You literally have to completely rebuild the engine.
That analogy is spot on, because I think a lot of people underestimate what a data broker request actually entails. When a consumer says, delete my data, or give me a copy of my data, it isn't just sitting in one neat little folder on a single hard drive somewhere.
Right. It's totally fragmented. It's in the marketing database. It's in the sales logs. It's probably cashed in a bunch of third-party vendor servers.
Exactly. So to shave a full third of your operational runway off that entire process, that requires serious engineering resources. You have to rewrite the APIs that fetch that data. You might even have to restructure your entire database architecture just so it can compile and package those consumer profiles faster.
Which is wild.
Yeah, if your backend tools currently take 40 days to process a request, you are perfectly legally compliant yesterday, but you are literally breaking the law tomorrow.
So corporate counsel really needs to calendar that 30-day clock immediately.
Immediately. And builders need to start re-architecting right now.
Okay, so we're talking about clicking accept on a screen or, you know, fetching data from a server. We're talking about digital interfaces. But one of the sources in our stack today bleeds out of the digital space and directly into the physical world. What happens when the software is just listening?
You're referring to Louisiana's new ambient AI scribe rule. And this is honestly one of the most fascinating developments we've seen so far.
Walk me through this, because this one totally blew my mind. I know that places like the Veterans Health Administration have been deploying ambient AI scribes for a while now.
Yeah, they have.
And for the listener who might not know, these are basically AI tools that sit on a doctor's desk. They listen to the conversation between the doctor and the patient, and they automatically generate the clinical notes for the medical record.
Right, which is huge because it saves doctors hours and hours of typing every week.
It's an incredibly useful technology. Private health systems are rolling them out everywhere to fight physician burnout.
Yeah.
But then Louisiana stepped in and again, passing this unanimously in their house and said, we are regulating the literal moment the microphone turns on.
Exactly, the actual point of capture.
The bill says a clinician must provide a verbal disclosure before the AI scribe even records the clinical visit.
Yes.
It's basically like a Miranda warning for AI in the exam room.
That's a brilliant way to phrase it, honestly. It is a strict verbal mandate.
But wait, don't hospitals already sign a business associate agreement, like a BAA, with these AI vendors?
Yeah.
And doesn't the patient sign like a dense IPCAR intake form in the waiting room anyway? Yeah. Doesn't that cover the privacy aspect?
Not under this new law. And that is exactly the trap a lot of legal teams are going to fall into.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a signed BAA does not cure a missing verbal notice in Louisiana. A glossy poster on the exam room wall saying AI is in use absolutely does not count.
So they have to say it.
The clinician must physically speak the words out loud at the bedside, explicitly telling the patient that artificial intelligence is going to generate the transcription.
So how does a tech builder actually prove they complied with a verbal law? Like, if I'm building this AI scribe software, how do I keep my hospital clients from getting sued?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, that is the core engineering challenge right there. You have to build compliance directly into the device's user interface.
Okay, how?
Builders must code a clinician-facing prompt into the app that fires right before the first audio frame is ever captured. Maybe it's a pop-up that literally blocks the recording button until the doctor clicks a checkbox saying, I have verbally informed the patient.
I see. So it actively forces the human to act before the system works.
Yes. And crucially, developers must log that specific spoken consent timestamp as a discrete field in the database. It has to be completely separate from the general electronic health record intake acknowledgments.
That makes sense.
And for counsel advising these vendors, you must audit the deployment scripts you actually give to the doctors. The script the doctor reads has to specifically identify the AI as the entity generating the transcript.
Right. It can't just be vague.
Exactly. It cannot just vaguely say, hey, this visit is being recorded for quality purposes. It must name the AI.
Wow. Okay, so we've controlled the microphone. The state is stepping in when the AI is listening. But what about when the AI is the one doing the talking?
That's a huge issue right now, too.
Yeah, I noticed our sources include regulations on how health information is communicated downstream to the public.
We are seeing the emergence of what I really like to call the human gate. It's basically states demanding transparency whenever AI assumes a role traditionally held by a human. Let's look at California's new law targeting synthetic performers used in health advertising.
Basically, fake doctors and ads.
Exactly. I mean, we've all seen them on social media, a very professional-looking person in a white coat talking about a new supplement or some telehealth service.
Yeah, they look totally real.
But under this new California mandate, if a digital replica or a synthetic performer is depicted as a healthcare provider in an advertisement, the law requires clear and conspicuous disclosure to the viewer.
So what does this all mean for the marketing teams and the ad tech builders who are creating the software that generates these videos?
It means they must wire a disclosure surface across every single product line that touches health ads.
Sure.
It is no longer enough for your software to just generate a highly realistic video. The software must force the user, the marketer, to append a visible disclosure tag if that AI avatar is wearing a stethoscope.
Okay, so states are forcing us to tag AI when it acts like a doctor in a commercial.
Right.
But what about actual clinical care? Are we seeing case studies on how AI is communicating with real patients when the stakes are literally life and death?
Yes, we are. And this brings us to the Seattle Children's Hospital Project, led by Dr. K. Casey Lyon. This is a brilliant case study in supervised AI deployment.
Oh, yeah, this is fascinating.
They built a hybrid AI translation system to draft hospital discharge instructions in languages like Spanish, Somali, Vietnamese, and simplified Chinese.
Which solves a massive equity problem. Because if you have to wait for e-human-only translation pipeline, a family might wait days for their paperwork.
Exactly.
So they end up just going home with English instructions they can't read, which leads to terrible outcomes like accidental medication overdoses and preventable hospital readmissions. Using AI to instantly draft the translation makes total sense.
It does. But here's the critical architectural choice they made. A credentialed human medical translator must read and sign off on every single AI draft before it ever reaches the family.
Wait, I have to push back on this.
Okay, what?
Because if I am an executive looking at the bottom line, isn't the whole selling point of buying an AI system to achieve speed and scale by removing the human bottleneck? Why intentionally build the bottleneck back into the software?
It's a totally fair question. But in high-stakes environments like clinical care, speed simply cannot supersede safety.
Fair point.
If an AI hallucinates a translation regarding a pediatric medication dosage, the results are catastrophic. The genius of Seattle Children's design is that it positions the AI as a drafter, not a decider.
Okay, I see. So the AI does the heavy lifting, the initial translation, which saves the human translator massive amounts of time, but that human gate remains non-optional for safety.
Yes, and beyond safety, think about this from the perspective of corporate counsel. A human-in-the-loop pipeline is your absolute best friend when it comes to liability.
Because it preserves a defensible record.
Exactly. It establishes a clear locus of professional responsibility. If a medical translation is ever legally challenged in court, the hospital can point to a named, credentialed human reviewer who actually signed off on the document.
Rather than just shrugging their shoulders and blaming some black box algorithm they don't even control.
Exactly.
It's the difference between a tool that assists a human professional and a tool that blindly replaces one. That makes a lot of sense.
It really does.
So we've seen how states can squeeze a timeline, we've seen how they control the point of capture, and we've seen how they force a human into the loop. But what happens when tweaking the workflow just isn't enough?
What do you mean?
Like, what happens when a state looks at an AI product and decides that no amount of disclosure or consent can make it safe?
This is where we see a major escalation. We are looking at a set of bills in New York, heavily pushed by Attorney General Letitia James, that explicitly define, name, and prohibit the manufacture, distribution, and sale of chatbot toys.
And they define a chatbot toy specifically as a children's physical toy with an embedded AI companion targeting kids under the age of 13.
Yes, and the bill text is highly specific about the mechanisms it considers dangerous. It explicitly calls out passive voice recording using internal data for model training and external data sharing with third parties.
Which, if you think about it, are basically the three main pipes any developer builds into an AI companion by default, right?
Exactly.
Like, it has to listen to the kid to respond, it trains on the interactions to get better, and it usually pings a third-party cloud server to process the language model.
Exactly. Which means this legislation isn't just asking for a better privacy policy. This raises an important question, an existential question, really, for manufacturers. Mm. For toy companies and the lawyers advising them, this isn't about tweaking a consent flow on an app.
What is it about, then?
It is about mapping your entire inventory of SKUs against the legal definition.
Wait, for those of us who aren't knee-deep in retail supply chains, when you say mapping SKUs, you just mean going through every single barcode, every single product variation in your warehouse, and evaluating if it accidentally qualifies as a prohibited AI toy under New York law.
Yes. Because if your product fits that definition, the entire product category is hitting a legal dead end in one of the largest markets in the country.
Wow.
You literally cannot manufacture it, distribute it, or sell it there. The nursery is now a highly regulated room, and passive recording of children is being treated as an unmitigable risk.
And if you get caught selling one anyway?
Well, beyond the immediate financial penalties, the bill also mandates an interagency study on the risks and harms of these toys.
Okay, why is that significant?
Because that study is going to create a public state-sanctioned record of the psychological or privacy harms these devices cause. And you can guarantee the plaintiffs, bar, you know, the lawyers looking to file class action lawsuits, they will be reading that study very closely to build future litigation against manufacturers.
Wow. Okay, let's take a step back and look at the whole board here. We set out to find the practical playbook emerging from the states. And what we're seeing is this massive converging architecture that is incredibly strict.
It really is.
We have Delaware pulling thresholds down to 15,000 consumers and locking the most valuable advertising data behind strict affirmative opt-ins.
Yeah.
We have Louisiana demanding spoken bedside consent before a clinical microphone can even turn on,
yeah,
and backing it up with the threat of triple damages.
A huge deal.
California is forcing visible disclosures onto synthetic actors and slashing data broker response time so severely that back-end databases basically have to be restructured.
Exactly.
Seattle Children's is modeling how to keep human defensibility in the AI loop to protect against catastrophic errors.
Yeah.
And then New York is flat out banning child-facing AI toys because the core mechanics of how they work are deemed inherently unsafe.
It is a profound shift in how technology is governed, and it leaves us with a critical reality for anyone building or advising in this space.
Which is?
If software builders and corporate counsel want to avoid the absolute nightmare of maintaining 50 different code bases and 50 different compliance manuals for 50 different states, they will naturally architect their technology to comply with the strictest possible common denominator.
Which means?
It means the ultimate national privacy and AI standard in the United States might never be legislated by Congress at all. It is going to be coded into existence by developers who are just trying to survive the state-level crossfire.
That is wild to think about. The map isn't waiting for Washington to draw the lines. The states are already forcing the code to change.
Exactly right.
So if you are listening to this and you are building tech or advising the companies that do, don't wait for a federal bill that might never come. Review your data pipelines, audit your consent workflows, and check your database clocks before the states run them out on you. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time.